Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks, going until 2 o'clock today. I'm David Ellis, and with me as my producer and technical operator is Dennis Johnson. Well, you know what was said last night by Prime Minister Motley, effective from tomorrow night. We will be going through a curfew situation in the country. Other countries have been far more drastic in what they have done. They have gone in the direction of total shutdowns, emergency scenarios. But Barbados has opted for a different approach, which gives you some latitude to be out and about in the day. I said some latitude because when you listen to what the Prime Minister said last night, she is urging as limited an external activity as you possibly can be involved in. Essentially, she says, in Barbadian parlance, stay home, or stand home, as we would say. Restrict your movements in the country, and certainly we wait to see how it will be enforced in the night. There are certain essential services that will have the opportunity to continue to do their jobs, and we are anticipating that government will give more details as the hours roll on. So you have a lot to talk about. You need to give your thoughts, your views on where we are right now, what you think we can do better. Most of all, though, you know, this is a time for us to be supportive of one another. It really is not the time for us to be tearing down, because, as I've said before, we are all in this together. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
Hi, morning. Your last thing you mentioned there is not the thing to be tearing down. But this is not a tearing down issue that I'm raising here. This morning, listening to the Turkey news from your network there, I didn't get a chance to listen to the 7:30 news. But in your report, I heard the press conference last night from the Prime Minister, and obviously the news clipping that you guys would have carried. But just want to get your view in light of a conversation I had in the House this morning. Mm-hmm. The Prime Minister mentioned that she will be going for a bit of a procedure on the advice of her doctors over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering what the position of the state, like Gitzmore, did not hear anything about that clipping. I felt that was somewhat relevant news in light of everything that's going on naturally. And obviously, nationally, the COVID-19 and the approach to that state certainly priority. But the mentioning of our Prime Minister having a procedure, whether minor or major, and the fact that she felt it necessary, as she said, she on base working, it was going to be transparent. But what you mentioned procedure, suggesting is that that is obviously something that's going to be invasive in nature, whether minor or major. So we're just wondering if that is something that you guys see as relevant enough to put into the national conversation and further news clipping, or if this is something that we shouldn't put too much focus, or it will be perceived as taking the discussion away from COVID-19.
No, I don't think that most people would consider that it is not something that is important. You know, sometimes in trying to put together a newscast, you've got so much information, and remember, I mean, I've listened to that particular press statement which came from the Prime Minister last night, and she said quite a lot in there, along with mentioning that she was going for a procedure over the weekend. She said so much more. So it is quite possible that a reporter pulling it together would leave out something for one newscast, but that doesn't mean that it is forgotten for subsequent newscasts. We have not downplayed the significance of the Prime Minister saying that she's going to have a procedure. We certainly wish her well. We would be as concerned as so many people in this country, because you know we have spoken time and time again about the load that she's carrying, about the extent to which she appears to stand head and shoulders above all the other political figures in the country at the moment, the leadership that she has brought. And I suppose there are those who will say to you, it just underscores the importance of the Prime Minister being able to work in such a way that others can quickly grow in the leadership of this country. Because no. I know quite a number of people who feel that we would be far more vulnerable without her leadership. That's how they feel. It may not be so, but that's how they feel.
Right. Well, this brings me to this point now. I may want every point after this. This brings me to this point. My query on the matter is not to be perceived as though I'm knocking the Prime Minister, because in all fairness...
I didn't interpret your comment that way.
Not you personally, but remember we're speaking to the wider community here. And I don't want to be perceived that way, because it's just a query I had in Lakeville. I felt that was a significant part.
I thought you were knocking the news. I thought you were knocking us for not mentioning it in the newscast.
Well, here's the thing. I wouldn't go ahead to knock you. That's why I put it in question form. Because to knock you means that I would have been privy to the assessment of what should be presented in the news. And I would be so presumptuous. So I felt, let me put it to you and let you get an opportunity to respond, because as you rightly said, there's a lot of stuff that has to be decided upon before you come to the public with news. But that said, I felt and feel now that, speaking of the Prime Minister, all the loads she could con with all the other political figures that, you know, work with her, I do feel that, in all fairness, based on what proceeded, that this is the best person to lead the country with the team she has. Like, even within the makeup of cabinet, I don't think there's anyone that can necessarily rival the Prime Minister in terms of ability to present the case for the people, whether it's up or down.
Okay, sir. Thank you. We have to move. Thank you very much. Thank you. I want to take this opportunity to extend sincere condolences to the family of the caller who has become well known to us as Arthur. I think some days ago I did say that we had missed his call or calls, and clearly there was some sense that something was wrong. Well, we regret very much that he has passed. He's made a significant contribution to discussion via this program. He's always been one of the more engaging callers, frequent but engaging, and always brought an opinion that one had to grapple with in terms of being able to, at times you agreed with him, at times you just didn't agree with him, but in all of that, we were able to have polite conversation. May you rest in peace. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Well, I suppose by now you know that Britain's Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, has tested positive for the coronavirus. His health secretary, Matt Hancock, has also tested positive for the virus. The death toll in Spain has risen sharply, as 769 people have died in 24 hours. The U.S. now has more than 85,000 cases. That means that the United States has overtaken China. Indeed, the specific number I have here right now is that the United States has 86,012 cases. China had 81,897. Italy is next with 80,000. Spain has 64,000. Here in the Caribbean, I think Trinidad and Tobago tops the list. They have 65. And then there's Jamaica that has remained a bit constant at 26. Barbados has jumped to 24. And Dominica, they still have 11. And Bahamas 9. So these are the leading figures that we have within the Caribbean community. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good Good morning, David.
Yes, morning.
It's Glenn Murray.
Yes, morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm well.
I'm good. Before I have a couple of things I'd like to talk about, everything in connection with coronavirus and Barbados. But before we do that, I would also like to join in paying a brief tribute to Arthur, whom you mentioned in your opening remarks, and at the same time correct a couple of errors that came out in people's discussion about his passing yesterday. His name is Mal Artemus, and he was married, and he's the father of two children, a boy and a girl. And he did go to law school, and he would have been 83 in August. I know some members of his family, but I knew him when our paths crossed in Toronto in the 60s, 70s, and I lived there. And he was a civil servant here before going to Canada. Then he worked in Canada in government thing, and then he went into private business. Mm-hmm. When he came out of Barbados, he was a big noise, so to speak, in computers. He was a systems analyst and did a lot of work for major companies. I think he worked in the region too for in that field, systems analyst of computers. And you said he was quite an engaging caller, and he was very interesting that he always came with a different angle. You had to be on your P's and Q's and thinking carefully to be able to conquer him and probe him and whatnot. But I thought he was one of the more formidable presenters, and he will long go along the memory of the Brass Tacks family, I'm sure.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I want to talk a bit about fake news and social media in the context of Barbados. I try to apply some sociological and psychological principle and let people understand the phenomenon and how we can probably regard it and treat it. First of all, I think the fake news that we see now, that we are now encountering today as a result of the social media, as a result of technology, really is no more serious than at first in the context of coronavirus and in the context more of the curfew. We know how to treat it more seriously than when I no longer see it as a nuisance, but it really, given the potential damage it could do to the country by the fault of false information, it could set back, retire, damage the national effort and the well-being of
household.
Yeah. Because let me try to explain it how I analyze it. It really is a modern form of spreading of gossip. The gossip that in the past would have been passed over telephone or face to face on a rum shop at a standpoint in corners on the street land, it has no more power and reach and currency because of the nature of social media. Therefore, its impact at the time in the past when it would have taken a day or 2 days for news to spread around, now you can get it done in seconds. So therefore, anything that is malicious to the country, and no, that made me remember Kid Sight's song, Too Malicious and Dangerous, but there's a malicious in the sense of...
Well, give me an example of something that would have been spread via social media recently that you thought fell into that category.
Like for example, the most immediate one, yesterday with the news about urging people to go along to the welfare department to collect this money that's supposed to come to them. First of all, you were bringing people together in a crowd, which was, to me, endangering the whole question of social distancing, physical distancing, and bringing people together, people who are under stress, who are anxious, who are in need, and bringing them, endangering themselves, endangering the whole process of keeping people apart and separate in order to control the virus. And if you multiply that, and with the coming measures to be implemented, if that is maintained, that could cause a lot of confusion.
In all fairness, the government of Barbados has put out messages to the effect that you need to be cautious about adhering to messages on social media, that you need to check the government information service, that you need to check credible sources. I mean, we have the apparatus at our disposal to be able to counter that. Given where we are today, you will always find people who are going to set out to be malicious. and dangerous.
But, right.
You know, but once we reinforce that point, that you got to listen to credible sources, this is one of the reasons why we have been speaking ourselves about the need to listen to the radio stations of record, those that, you know, you can rely upon, not to just pick up the social media gossip and just run with it as fact and that sort of thing. Because when it comes through, we still have to verify it. So I would not, to me, I think we have done pretty well so far in containing panic and that sort of thing. Because I see a lot of stuff out there on social media, a lot.
Which you have to ignore.
And there's some, that even if it is credible, it's difficult to determine the source. And once I don't know the source, I just don't go with it. Because, I mean, somebody's telling me something about this Cuban drug. And they put out this thing that China has officially endorsed it. I went to check, and I saw nothing from the official Chinese sources to confirm it.
Yeah.
You know, in the meantime, the same Cuba that they're talking about, well, what? At least 60-something cases right now. All right? I haven't heard any great triumphalism about that officially within Cuba, but there are people out there who are peddling it for all sorts of reasons. So, I mean, I operate on the basis that you have to be cautious in that regard.
Yeah, I'm afraid of, but a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't listen to every newscast.
We just got to work with it.
Right, you know. But all right. One of the reasons why I think it is done, a lot of people don't understand why people do it. But from my knowledge, people do these kind of things because they seek attention. Some people get a perverse thrill. It's like almost like a man like the arsonist who is supposed to get thrilled by seeing the fire he set blaze. He's got to get some kind of psychological satisfaction and stimulus from it. There's some people who get a thrill in the same way people spell false rumors and gossip about people and get a thrill about it because people are talking about it and the people is probably hurt and whatever. So it is some people who are looking for attention make them feel important for a while because they know everybody's running about and chasing and talking about that kind of. So that, from my research, those are the kind of factors that impel people to indulge in these kind of habits.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for calling, Glenn. And be safe. Down to brass tacks. Hello. Are you there?
Yeah. Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Mr. Johnston, also. And good morning to our brass tack family. Greetings. Mr. Ellis, as I listen to the Prime Minister on the curfew, it seems to have caught some people off guard. But we knew beforehand we would get to stage three. So what I'm saying is that the employers and the employees should consult with each other how to stagger the hours to fit the curfew. Because we're going to change to adjust the curfew. The curfew is going to change to adjust to us. For instance, I heard on the program last night, the lady was talking about her daughter at the hospital. What the hospital should have done before should have issued a sticker or something with an official hospital stamp to put on the windshield of the car so that in case they get stopped by the police will look at it and then pass on the information to their colleague. Let them know when they look out for P10 or anything like that so that she might get stopped again, yeah, but they would just say, you go ahead. Because the Prime Minister also said that you should be only on the, every on the road should have a reasonable explanation to where you are on the street. Okay? Also about those persons who have to catch the 6 o'clock bus. They say they're going to run at 5 o'clock. No. The bus will have to adjust now to suit your time. And your employee also have to adjust to suit the time. You can't come in at that time no more. So all the owners of the vans will then adjust to suit the timing of the people. Because you've got to get to the bus stop for 5:30 to get a 6 o'clock bus. So you get there for 6:30 and get the 7 o'clock bus. As simple as that. So we all just need to cooperate with each other, which is the employers, the employees. And to add to that, Mr. Ellis, you should be only on the road if it is necessary. So you should have got a lot of people in the supermarket every day when you know that the curfew time is 8 o'clock. because the supervisor has to shut off at 5:30 so that the employees will get in time to get home.
Well, I wish you luck in being able to get that kind of discipline, because other countries have had a hard time achieving it, so much so that they began with moderate measures and then eventually they went the whole hog, because many people they don't behave like that, and they start to panic. You see their panic, especially in areas like how people go to the supermarket and how much they are buying and that sort of thing. I mean, some people don't see that as a bad thing. They say, well, that's a recognition that they understand the magnitude of the problem, that they're taking it seriously. But within that, there's also, there could also be some element of panic too. But I agree with you as much as possible that that's what we should do. But people develop some practices and behaviors over time, and then they become, and they are instinctive reactions to situations that are considered to be dangerous. So we have to work with all of that, you know. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning. You are on the air, and we welcome you to the program.
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Yes, are you hearing me?
Yes, I am.
Yes. I want to raise the issue about the reusable shopping bags, the bags that people are taking back to the supermarket for their groceries and supplies.
Yes.
Now, I am going to assume that not everybody clean their reusable shopping bags. So I want to know what is the policy, the interim policy of supermarkets with respect to people bringing their reusable shopping bags. Some of them may not be washable, that you could put it in the washing machine and have it clean. So I want to know if supermarkets would be willing to waiver the fee for the plastic bags they offer to the shoppers. And I would want to suggest that this is something they can consider in the interim, you know, because I understand what the Minister of the Blue Economy is suggesting with the bags, with that policy and everything, which I think is a... Anyhow, but that's not what I called about. I really want to raise the issue about people taking back the reusable shopping bags for their groceries and supplies.
Why do you see that as a big issue?
Because we're talking about ways in which we can stop preventing the spread of this virus. Many of those bags go in places that I can't imagine, back of our cars, our hands, we put them on the ground. We go to the supermarket with these reusable bags for our groceries. So I am assuming that some people do not clean those bags. Some people don't wash them. I have read elsewhere where some supermarkets have banned reusable bags, mm-hmm. and they have started to implement the policy of plastic bags only. I'm not saying this is something that we should do here, but I'm saying it's worth considering if we want to do everything to help prevent the spread of this virus.
Well, Dennis tells me that he's seen people spraying these bags. So that's one way.
Spraying the bags at the supermarket or
yes,
at the home?
At the supermarket.
No.
So as to ensure that, you know, you, I suppose, whether it is the shopping bag that you bring or the bag that you take from the supermarket, you're running the same risk right now.
Well, it's a plastic bag you're going to get the supermarket.
You're going to get a plastic bag, and that plastic bag is going to be handled by somebody who's going to have on a glove, and that glove has been touching all sorts of other things.
Understood, but you're not going to take back that plastic bag to the supermarket?
No, but
you're going to use that for the garbage, like how many Barbadians use those plastic bags to dispose of their garbage?
Well, I suppose I can't knock any one process that you believe will help reduce the risk, but I want to just make the point that the risks are many and varied, and the precautions must be taken whether you are using a reusable bag or brand new bag. It is also an issue that you have to take into consideration when you take up your items in the supermarket. You know, it is all around us.
If I may interject.
So I'm not knocking that one item, but I'm
saying... Understood. It raises a wider question about supermarket policies.
Mm-hmm.
Because the gloves, as you rightly said, can also help spread it. So the plastics, as we know, are perhaps one of the surest ways to... And then again, if you look at it, the plastic bags issued from the supermarkets may not necessarily carry the virus. I said may not necessarily carry the virus. But at the same time, when you take home those bags, you're not going to use them again except to dump put your garbage in and whatever purpose you want to use them for. But the virus will not last on those plastic bags as it would in the reusable shopping bag.
Where's the science on that?
Well, I don't have the science, but we know we are guaranteed about plastics to some degree. It is not foolproof. Nothing is foolproof. We are guaranteed about the plastics. Why are we using plastic gloves? Why are people putting on plastics to protect themselves? So plastics has a way of proofing that we don't catch the virus.
You got me a little confused here, because as I understand it, you put on the glove to
mm-hmm.
make sure that your hands do not come in direct contact with the virus. But after you have used that glove, you have to be careful in disposing of it properly, because
mm-hmm.
because it is plastic does not mean that it is
vulnerable. You're absolutely
all I'm saying to you, I don't want us to just put this focus. Just let me make the point. I think you're running the risk here of isolating the bag that is being taken back. And essentially suggesting that you run a greater risk with the bag that is being taken back than the new bag that you take.
And
I'm saying to you that your new bag is also handled by somebody. It is handled by you. And let's stop and think what you do when you go to the supermarket. The first thing that you do is that you've been driving in your car and handling the steering wheel and other components within the car. You then go and open your car door from the inside. You touch that. You touch it from the outside. Okay? So these are also all contact points where that virus can be there. You then go in the supermarket. You pick up your items. And you get the trolley. You put your hands on the trolley. You have no gloves on. Okay? Another contact point. When you go looking at the various items, other people have touched them as well. So that's another point. Then you go to the cashier and you push your hands in your pocket and you pull out your cards or your cash. Another contact point. You see where I'm coming from?
But you see, we understand that we cannot totally eradicate the causes or the instances where we can catch.
So how are you going to isolate a bag from all of that?
May I finish, please?
Sure.
All I am saying, the plastics serves as more of a protective measure. It is not 100% proof. All that you have said, I have accepted. But look at it carefully. When we go into the supermarkets, at least, I have noticed that they're asking you to sanitize as soon as you come through the door, especially some other business establishments. You use the hand sanitizer, you go in, you do what you have to do, you pick up the groceries, et cetera, et cetera. When you get home or when you get in the car, you're going to sanitize your hand. You're going to wash your hands. You're going to do whatever you have to do at your home. All I'm saying is the plastics is a more protective measure, in my view, as opposed to the reusable bags at this point in time, especially if you don't clean them properly. So we're going to have to ask people to clean the reusable bags.
Yes. I think that's a critical point. The most significant point that should be made is that you need to clean those bags and you need to take all the necessary precautions because you are involved in so many practices. I think there's another caller who wants to engage
both of
us. Just hold on. Yes.
Yes. Hello. Good morning. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning.
I want to add some information here. I understand what the other caller is saying, and it sounds reasonable. But the truth is that there are some facts out there where the scientist has proven that bacteria stays on plastic, and this is one of the reasons why it's been destroying reefs around the world, because of the bacteria that attach themselves to plastic. Even in the sea, it doesn't destroy the bacteria because of how strong it adheres to the plastic and then connects to the reef. So the idea of the plastic, I understand what she's saying, but the reality is that we have to ask people to just change their behavior. We have to educate them. We have to repeat over and over and over and over and over till they get it, because this is what we have to do.
Mm-hmm. Carla, if I may.
Yes.
Now, we are dealing with the coronavirus, something that has never been seen. The bacteria that you're talking about, scientists are aware of, and they would know about, all right? As far as I read, I understand that plastics, the coronavirus itself, it cannot exist in temperatures, and it certainly plastics have been used as a protective measure until the scientists say that the plastics can no longer serve as a protective measure. Protective measure, notice I said that, against the coronavirus. I cannot use your comparison to support and to justify that the plastics will do nothing for the coronavirus, prevention of the coronavirus.
Well, here is the other challenge that you have. The government has set a time limit in place for the replacement of these petroleum-based plastics.
Yeah.
So more than likely, we don't have any of them on the island. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is...
Wait, hang on. You're talking about, when you said the petroleum-based, you're talking about the normal plastic bags that they're still issue in supermarkets, that when I go to...
There is a time limit of those running out. So even if there are some on the island, we're looking at limited numbers. And to carry out your plan, because we don't know how long Corona is going to last.
Remember I said interim?
Yes, I understand that, but I am saying also, too, there's a danger here in us already trying to change a behavior and move Bajans away from using the plastic. Even though the problem is not the plastic, the problem is our disposal and how we handle the use of the thing. Okay?
But the point is that we have asked
people to change their behavior, now to ask them to change it back.
Can I enter this discussion here by saying to you that this caller is speaking at a time when there is a movement in the United States which is saying that the reusable shopping bags that countless Americans increasingly use instead of disposable plastic bags is a problem. The plastic bag industry, and I'm reading this piece here, battered by a wave of bans nationwide, is using the coronavirus crisis to try to block laws prohibiting single-use plastic. They quote one industry spokesman as saying, "We simply don't want millions of Americans bringing germ-filled reusable bags into retail establishments, putting the public and workers at risk." And the Plastics Industry Association seems to be behind this. You know how the United States operates. There's always some group that is able to get somebody to do research to support the position that they have. The Plastics Industry Association is also lobbying to quash plastic bag bans. Last week, they sent a letter to the United States Department of Health and Human Services requesting that the department publicly declare that banning single-use plastics during a pandemic is a health threat. Okay?
Right. So, with an American company, I have serious, serious questions because of how they do their business. And it's all based on their own science.
What's the other side of this matter?
What's the other side of it?
What is the other side? You just brought one side where it suggests that lobbyists, especially those who are in the plastic bag industry, will almost, and I'm interpreting, promote a situation where, to their benefit, where they want the use of plastic bags.
Yes.
Look, this discussion has gone far and wide. And I would want to come back to talk about this plastic bag issue and the measures that have been put in place by government. But in the meantime, I just wanted to raise the other side, which was the concern pertaining to the reusable bags and the danger they present. So y'all,
okay.
You know, the discussion, I really want to talk about the plastic bag issue.
All right, ma'am. We've exhausted this one so far. Thank you very much. At 10:44, good morning and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well. And you?
I'm fine. I hope you're staying safe.
I'm trying my best.
Yes, yes. That's all we can do. Firstly, let me say I wish the Prime Minister well, and also a speedy recovery. And I'd like to say to her to just use the spirit to focus on herself and concentrate on herself, you know, and that will help her in the healing process. Now, I know the issues of COVID-19, obviously, but as my thing is, last Tuesday marked 22 months that this government were in office. Actually, I think it's a godsend, really, because that over the last 22 months, we see a significant change in what has been happening in Barbados. Firstly, thanks to God, the government, and the people of Barbados, we have seen this significant change, even in the said very issue with the COVID-19. I mean, this situation, the leadership, and I like to compliment the government on their leadership. To my mind, I think the Barbados government have functioned with this COVID-19 the best throughout the world, as far as I'm concerned.
Throughout the world?
Yes. Yes, as far as I'm
really
concerned.
Really gone far.
Yes, they gone far. Because if you had to look at it, right, what they did, like, same in the same Italy, Spain, even the United States and these bigger countries, they're sort of mixing the people up. But as far as I'm concerned, the victims, all of our victims or potential people are isolated. That is a strategic point.
Man, look, seriously, we can only come to these conclusions in the process of time because of the nature of this virus. This virus, as you are seeing in the United States in particular, it was like sitting there, circulating among the population for quite a long time. And now it mushrooms. So I'm not going to make a judgment call on the totality of it just yet, because I just have to wait and see how it develops in Barbados, a country that now has 24, right? So
yes, but I'm talking about the whole system is, well, you know, they have the different stages. It's well thought out. It's not a knee-jerk reaction. As I said, importantly, like how the try to avoid people from, or potential people from going in the general hospital, because that's like putting fluid to a fire. But more Italy and all those, you got some elderly cares, you know, the care people for the elderly. And all those big countries, they said, they're dealing with the people in the general hospital, you know? So I think that's a fundamental mistake they're making, you know? And as I said, the next thing that I'm glad for, actually, when the people from the opposite side were criticizing the government that had borrowed reserves. Now, you see how important these reserves are proven to be? Because in the face of the reserves that we have, the most that the Barbados ever had in its history, 1.5 billion right now. That gave us the elbow room and also gave us the ability to do what the government is doing to help protect the people. I mean, this is also a good initiative as well. When you have the $20 million to cushion the people that are the most vulnerable. So it's important. This is proven now to be a lifesaver for the whole country. Prevention that this last administration was still in office, and this is the point. Before any foreign reserves, we couldn't have done none of these things.
Well, I think there is a significant lesson in all of this for trying to run Barbados in such a situation where you can deal with emergencies. You see, we are living in different times. You have global warming, which is producing these dangerous hurricanes. So far, we have been able to escape.
I see global.
But it could happen anytime. There's the potential for earthquake. There is the potential for man-made disasters as well. And then you have things like, I mean, we had Ebola, never got here. SARS, never got here. MERS, never got here. But this one has. And it just shows how, you know, fragile and tenuous our situation is. And that you cannot flirt with this economy. You can't mess with this economy the way that some people believe you can. I mean, it is all well and good to talk about trying to look after the interests of the poor, but you have to be able to sustain that. You have to do things to sustain it. You need to convince Barbadians, too, of what needs to be done to get us there. One of the more significant lessons coming out of COVID-19 is that we have made so much progress in terms of telecommunications that people can actually work from home. Everybody doesn't have to go to the office. We are now being pushed in the direction of trying to get away from the situation that the woman from St. Lucie recounted to us some weeks ago about having to pay $21 a day to get to the community college. Why should that be necessary when we can use telecommunications to communicate and to teach and that sort of thing? So that's what COVID-19 is helping us to realize, that we can do better.
But if you had to even go back to the edutech, when the same Miss Molly was the education minister, when she tried to introduce the edutech, and I remember the people were critical of the BUTI time for blocking the implementation of the edutech. Now you see what is happening here now? Now if you had had edutech on screen,
that's spilt milk. Does it make any sense right now crying over that? I don't think so.
No. I'm not crying over it.
We have to take advantage of the current environment and speed up processes and do things differently.
No, where the children can be educated from at home. That's the point. I'm not crying over it.
Yeah. Okay, we got to go. Yeah, cool. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, morning.
Yeah, first, I'm very happy to hear your voice today, and I hope that you play a more regular part in Rastats since we are down this crisis, because I think you bring a lot to the table.
Thank you very much.
I really do, so. I'm a regular listener of Rastats, and I would think on the 13th of this month is the worst program I ever heard for Rastats. But anyhow, I also want to say that some of your moderators and some of the media people is to bring a lot of people into problems with the supermarket on this time by telling people they were panic shopping and so forth. And now the supermarket is the hardest place to get in. This morning I drove down Oyston. I didn't go in the supermarket door, and the amount of people I saw at Poplar and at the supermarket, I guess that's before they were open, and I guess all they know, some are still there, ain't making a move yet. So I'm saying because of...
I beat up on my moderators for that, but seriously...
Because...
Just let me make the point. Let me make the point to you. Let me make this point to you, though. Before COVID got to Barbados, people were seeing this behavior on the television. They were seeing it in other countries. Wherever this particular disease has been prevalent, there has been some element of this panic buying. There was a reason, because there's the uncertainty that has dogged everybody with this. So I look, I can't tell you that, you know, I will put all the blame.
You're stuttering.
I won't put all the blame on moderators.
Oh,
I mean, people are seeing that.
I won't put all night.
I mean, we may take some responsibility as far as you're concerned, but we can't take all of it.
I agree with that. But once you're willing to take some, because you see, when if you could afford and you could buy groceries for 2 months, it keep you off the road a lot. If you could afford to buy, you know, things in bulk, you know, it keep you off the road instead of going to the supermarket today and spend $100 and go back tomorrow and spend another $100 and food will disappear, fruits will disappear. The only thing I'm short of now is fruits. That's the only thing, because I had a good set and I used up the last this morning.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying to you, David, I disagree with that fella too about the is hardly best, because we are in the morning days. This is yet young. Because I predict that America would have passed China for the year that Mr. Trump were getting on, and America's a white place, and state by state, and they didn't confine them. It wasn't too easy to confine it to one area, like China. So I knew America would have passed out China, and I said by this time, so I said by next week, Wednesday or Thursday, would have passed them out, but I were behind the clock.
Okay.
But, you know, we can't be too safe, because even with the plastic bag argument, you know, that doesn't even make a lot of sense, because how can we say, I buy daily use paper, and I just take a wet wipe and wipe off the paper. But, you know, you can't, everything you touch.
I mean, every page?
I just take a wet wipe. I buy 2 cases of wet wipe, David, 2 cases, and I just take one, and I just take out a wet wipe and wipe off the paper.
My goodness. Well, I can just imagine you moving from page to page with a wet wipe.
You try your best, but I say it can't be too safe. I mean, I might not come down the road and your own body thing. And like about 2 weeks ago, I went down space on the lady that I see me and my wife for a long time to grab me. I said, nah, to come down. And she was offended. Called her, I don't want no house. This was about 2 weeks ago, you know, in the space town, in the St. Peter's. I said, I don't want a house. I damn it that.
Yes, well, a guy says here, you know, thank you very much, sir. This person writes that it is said that the material that most wipes are made of is nearly invincible to break down. They take a very long time to disintegrate. Now, remember, we spent a lot of time talking about plastics, but here we are in a crisis where there is an upsurge in the use of the wipes. Now, I've heard some concern expressed about people putting the wipes into their toilets, and then it is creating a problem. He says that this writer says that in the U.S., these wipes are causing serious difficulties with the sewage systems, because people are flushing them down their toilets and causing blockages to the system. I would like for the Ministry of Health or someone from Sanitation Department to share some literature on the disposal of wipes before we have blockages in our wells or sewage systems, which will take millions to fix. Okay? Now, somebody else has sent me some information here from the World Health Organization. They're quoting the World Health Organization. Now, let me go and look for that myself, because, you see, I'm always worried about social media and some of the things that are circulated. So before I put that information out on the air, let me go and confirm it. Let me see it on their site, okay? Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Mr. Ellis, good morning to you.
Yeah. Good morning. How are you?
Pretty well today. I want to be guided and to be entertained by you in the discussion I'm going to raise with you now. I think, first let me say, this is my first time at this age of going to witness or will be witnessing what can be considered as a state of emergency in this country. And that is something that people seem to think is, you know, from what I've heard of other countries, from what I've realized of other countries, people seem to think this is something that you play around with. This is where the law of the country is fully executed and fully carried out. I'm saying that to say this, right? We are fortunate at this time to have a prime minister in the position of Amomir Motley, and I am of the opinion that she has been the only prime minister of this country who has been faced with so many situations in the period of time that she took over this country. 2 years, And now it is faced with the situation of COVID-19, which is a universal situation, and fighting the situation in terms of Barbados. But she has not fallen. She has taken every step of the way. So I'm asking Barbadians at this particular time, now that she's admitted to us that she's going through a procedure over the next couple of hours, that the same way we pray for COVID, we pray that she will go through this situation and come out on top of it. Besides that, I have followed this situation in this country for the last 2 years, Mr. Ellis. And the question I'm now going to put out, perhaps I will get a yes to it or I will get a no to it. The government has 26 people or 27 people on this side, supported by others. Parliament has just moved from public building to what it would consider to be worthing, out of the ambience of politics. My concern here that at this time there are politicians who are sitting in Parliament who needs to start understanding fully the representation that they place there. Listen to what I mean when I say that. I believe that the constituency office of these representatives should be fully equipped now with Wi-Fi or fully equipped with what we consider to be the communication, so that people who live in their constituencies, and many people who live in the constituencies of some of these parliamentarians, are asking questions, and the questions are directed to one person, and that is the Prime Minister, who can only ask and provide answers for some.
Where I'm going,
Mr. Ellis, is that I believe that since the parliamentarians are taken care of, since they're given what they can consider to be a constituency allowance and the constituency accommodation, that there should be a form of communication at this time, since they may not be able to take everybody who
so
wants.
You're saying that they should improve communication via the internet.
Upgrade to that point.
Valid, because many meetings these days are being held that way. A lot of communication is going in that direction, either on the telephone, through conference calls, or through facilities such as Zoom and others that people are using. So I can't knock that. I think it is something that they also need to be concerned about their own health and about the health of the people with whom they come into contact. So I, knowing the way that the government has been thinking in recent times, because even before this, this government placed considerable emphasis on upgrading the digital space. Okay, thank you very much. This whole question of the droplets associated with the virus and how long they last on various surfaces. I've gone to this page which says that typically an infected person's cough or sneeze spreads SARS-CoV-2, the coronavirus that causes the disease COVID-19, a highly contagious respiratory illness. To slow the rising number of infections, tens of thousands of Americans have been infected since January 20th. Researchers are looking for the coronavirus limits. Just how long can it last outside the human body is the question which is posed here. When it comes to how long, they say the airborne droplets containing the virus can survive up to 3 hours. How long can it live on steel? This article says up to 72 hours. The coronavirus can exist on stainless steel objects for 2 to 3 days. That's a problem because steel is commonly used in, listen to this, public transportation, and in scores of other public places, such as restroom stalls, faucets, and manual paper towel handles. So when you go into these areas and you use them, all the more reason why you need to clean your hands properly. Now, how long does it last on plastic? That came out here today. Hear this. Plastic objects can harbor the virus for 2 to 3 days. That's a special concern because many shared items are made of plastic and may not be sanitized often enough or completely enough. Take out food containers, light switches, cell phone cases, elevator buttons, and more are commonly made of plastics. While we are at it, what about cardboard? It can last on cardboard for up to 24 hours. What about glass? The virus can last as long as 4 days on glass, depending on location and temperature. According to a study by the Journal of Hospital Infection published in January, that report charted the persistence of the virus, to SARS-CoV, the SARS-CoV virus, which is similar to the current virus causing COVID-19. And items such as cell phone screens, mirrors, and inside glass doors can also support the virus. I hope that's helpful to you.